may be the underlying point of our togetherness this morning, is to find a better way. We had a gospel meeting in Clarksdale the last week in June and the first couple of days in July. Paul Franks spoke. I had two black preachers speak, and Robert Rawson was the last speaker. And we did a lot of preparation. We sent out circulars announcing the meeting to 30 churches within a 50-mile radius of Clarksdale. They invited people to come. We spent two Saturdays knocking on doors within about a 4-block radius of the church building, passing out number one, an announcement of the meeting and inviting people to come. Number two, a tract, Church of Christ, Who Are These People, by Josh Barnett. Fabulous tract. We had announcements made on the Batesville radio. I was a nervous wreck and exhausted from trying to organize and put together all this pre-preparation. The meeting was a Sunday through a Wednesday. We didn't have over, I think the biggest crowd was 39. And not a single person from the neighborhood came. Not a single person thought that way. And very few, almost none, of the churches that we sent these announcements to came with some of their people. The majority of the people there were armed and paid. Well, I said, very few people came. I think with 30-some churches we sent announcements out to. I'm telling you to tell you this. The day of the gospel meeting is probably over with as far as evangelism is concerned. Most gospel meetings today, if we're going to have them, need to be directed at getting our churches together as a encouragement service, as an excitement builder, as a fellowship generator, you know, getting our people together so that we can talk to them. But as far as reaching the lost and getting to people who are outside and not members of the church, they're not coming. You can beat yourself to death, and they're just not coming. So we need to try to find a better way. Now, I want to tell you on the front end that I don't have all the answers. All I have is experiences and maybe some possible suggestions. That's about it. But first off, I want you to look at this little survey I gave you, and I want you to help me out with it. How would you describe your feelings about sharing Christ and your faith with the unchurched? Pick out one of those. Are you uncomfortable? Are you awkward? Do you feel ineffective, afraid, or do you feel qualified? Circle one. Number two, what do you think about the Church of Christ's efforts to reach the unchurched over the last 5 or 10 years? Have we been unproductive, unrealistic, mechanical, unworkable, non-existent, or effective? Pick one out and circle. Number three, where do you feel is the best place to reach the unchurched to Christ and the church? In their home, in your home, at work, in church, all of the above. Four, what's the best method? Set up film strips and Bible studies in your home, invite them to church, study the Bible with them on your lunch hour at work. Friendship evangelism, all of the above. It's not hard. Number five, what methods did Jesus use to reach the unchurched? Go to people where they work, issued simple invitations, sent out others to evangelize, reached out to folks, going through a crisis, met with people in their homes, or all of the above. Certainly. What example did the first century church give us for reaching the unchurched with the gospel? Did they conduct gospel meetings and crusades? They hire full-time preachers to evangelize the lost? Did they do a door-knocking evangelistic campaign? Or did the church members went public with their faith in shops and bakeries and marketplaces, homes, army barracks, jails, etc.? All of the above. Which one do you think? Good example of the way the first church went about the business reaching the unchurched. And finally, number seven, what happens to the church when all of its activities are confined to the church building? Does it grow or does it decline? What has happened to the Church of Christ in the last 25 years? Are we growing or declining? Honest answer. What do you think, Bill?
Most places.
But this is not only true of us, it's true of all the other major denominations and religions in the United States. They're all declining.
Let me add an answer to you here. You said a collective quote. And in fact, last year, local energy community so we had a whole listing of those men. So they selected six men that would come and speak to us during the meeting.
Right.
And the other men on the list were not that time. They were going to be asked to come in next July. That's the kind of document to come to summer.
Where are these men?
And these men were invited to come, and today, some of them know about me that were in the Protestant pulpit in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, which is going on this week, Thursday of this week. And others I would obviously not.
I got news for you. It's not only hard to get church members in church, it's hard to get preachers to come to something. It's a problem for all of us. We have become complacent, as I mentioned last night. We have so many things going on, we feel like these other kinds of things are an intrusion on our time and our resources.
One man is recognized tonight, but he's got nursing going on in his house.
That's right,
sir. That's right. And others have got a hard work. John chapter 4.
5, Jesus is traveling to Jerusalem. He comes to the city of Samaria. He stops by in verse 6, Jacob's well. He's weary, it says. He's thirsty, obviously. The woman comes to the well to draw water, and he asks her for a drink, because he hasn't any means of getting to the water. It's probably 10 or 15 feet down below. So, in the process, his disciples had left. They went into the town to buy some food. So the woman said, well, how is it that you, being a Jew, ask for a drink of water from me, a Samaritan? For Jews don't have any dealings with us Samaritans. So Jesus gets into discussion with her about the living water, and that he is the living water. And if she will drink from him, she'll have everlasting life. Verse 14. Verse 15, she says to her, give me some of this water, have some of this water, that I may not thirst and not have to come here anymore to draw water. I don't know if any of you ever been down, had to go walking distance to get water on a daily basis, maybe 2 or 3 times a day, but it gets rather wearisome. Jesus said, well, call your husband. And they come back. She said, well, sir, I don't have any husband. He said, I know. You don't have one now, but you've had 5 husbands, and none of them are you with currently. None of them are your husbands right now. And she blows her away. She says, sir, I perceive that you're a prophet. I mean, how else would you know this background about my, I mean, these private things about my life? My fathers worship on this mountain, and you Jews say, well, we're supposed to worship in Jerusalem. Jesus said, woman, believe me, the hour is coming when we'll neither worship on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. But true worshipers, verse 23, will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. A little bit later on, the disciples come back. And they are a little perplexed also. About his relationship with and his conversation with this woman. Verse 30 says, they who went out of the city came back to him. In the meantime, his disciples urged him, saying, Rabbi, eat. But he said, I have food to eat of which you do not know. Therefore the disciples said to one another, has anyone brought him something to eat? So the conversation goes on. Jesus' day, no self-respecting Jewish male would be caught talking to a woman in a public place. That was just a part of their society, part of their culture. Jewish men did not talk to women in public places. And so by talking to her, he was violating a hard and fast social code and leaving himself open for criticism. There are a number of things that we need to know about this woman. And the main thing we need to know is that she was a sinner. She's unchurched, and she's a sinner. How do I know this? What time of day did she come to get water? to rural people, farm folks, usually feed and water their livestock early in the morning, you know, daylight. All the other, and she's the only woman coming to that well. Nobody's there. They've all come and gone a long time ago. Why has she come in the middle of the day? Because she doesn't feel good about herself. And she didn't want to be seen by other people. Because she's self-conscious about herself and her life and her personal problems. Number two, I know that she was a sinner because she's living in adultery. Jesus told her to get her husband. She said, I don't have a husband. But she was living with a man, having had five husbands. So she is, and in this process, I want you to understand that Jesus is not trying to embarrass this woman. He's trying to do two things. He's trying to get her to face herself. And he's trying to show her that he cares. So here's our first clue to saving lost people in our neighborhood who are unchurched. We can't bring a person to Christ and to conversion until they first own up to their sins. Conviction has to come before conversion. So in our conversations with people who are unchurched, once we have established a basis of love and trust with them, sooner or later we've got to get down to the nitty-gritty. Asking or opening is kind of what I call open questions. Questions that don't elicit a yes or no answer. How do you feel about your life, Kevin? How are things going with you? Why am I here? Why have you invited me to come and talk to you? What are we trying to get here? She said, and then she'll get into, and you just keep asking open-ended questions. How did these things come about? How did you get into this fix? And what can we do about it? So, all right. This woman's not only a sinner, but she practices a different religion than Jesus. And almost anybody you talk to today who is unchurched, while they're not going to church, they have a family history of religion. My folks have been Baptists all their lives, or they've been Catholics or Presbyterians or whatever, Church of God. She worshiped God in the temple in Samaria, and he worshiped God in the temple in Jerusalem. While their religious practices were in some cases similar, they were poles apart. This is generally true with us in the church and trying to deal with people, of unchurched people of other religious backgrounds. We may have some things in common. And we may want to talk about these things we have in common. But there are other things where we have nothing in common with them. Worship is one of the most confusing and misunderstood practices in the world today. And you need to remember this. We need to know this and believe this in our hearts. The Church of Christ is the only religion in America that offers our neighbors a neutral ground on which to study the Bible in the spirit and in truth. We are a neutral ground. Come right on in, Donnie. We got the dog tied up. Come on, baby. Join us. We're so glad to have you. We don't have any doctrines to defend. We don't have any creeds to expound. We don't have a long history of religious culture. Oh, what happens to the Bible? It provides us with a neutral ground on which to talk to people about Christ. And we must never lose sight of this fact. The Church of Christ offers honest seekers the Bible and nothing else. We don't have any creeds. We don't have any doctrines that we practice. All we have are the teachings of the apostles in the New Testament. And somehow or another, if we can get them to agree to this principle, that we're on a neutral ground here, all we have is our Bible, and we're on an adventure, so to speak, of discovery. We're trying to discover, to find out answers for our lives in God's Word. And if we can get them to understand that worship is not about here or there, and it's not about them or us, it's about worshiping God in true spirit and truth in ways that are acceptable to Him. Not to you and not to me, but what's acceptable to God. And when we get our neighbors to agree to that, then we've got this neutral and common ground on which we can study the Bible together. Now, besides Jesus and the Samaritan woman, there are the apostles, or they're, you know, his 12 disciples who will become his apostles. And they hold another clue in reaching our unchurched neighbors for Christ and the church. When they rejoined Jesus and the woman at the well, they were surprised to see Jesus talking to this woman.